Tish number 10012, reel number 5.
Mr. George Clayton, reel 5. Now, what happened? You'd done the stem to the Hoos Chateau mine, and then you'd run the wire back up, I think you said, to the support line.
Yes.
What would happen then?
Well, when the mine was blown up, of course, that would upset the Germans, doesn't it?
Could you see what would happen? What did you watch it happen?
You could feel what happened. Because it shook. I would be about, when the Hoos Chateau was blown up, I would be about 250 yards from it, I would say, looking from my trench.
What could you see?
Well, you saw the earth come up.
It broke the surface, then?
Yes, yes, and you felt it. It shook the ground, you know, and it made a hole like a quarry. When it did blown up, that's what it was like. And sometimes the infantry men used to follow that up, fight for the crater.
Did that happen on this occasion at Hoos Chateau?
Did
the infantry attack after the Hoos Chateau one went up?
No, they didn't attack.
What was the noise like of one of these mine explosions?
Well, it was a dull thud, but it was an experience that you'll never forget. To me, it was like an earthquake. I've never been in an earthquake, but imagine it. The ground was shaking, you know, shaking. And then you saw the earth go up. And later on, you could find there was a hole where that explosion was. I could only compare it to a quarry that you see on the surface there many a time, you know. Oh.
So it was successful in destroying the Hoos cellars?
I would think we were.
I want now to ask you some detailed questions about that Hoos mine. Did you use a technique called clay kicking as you were digging that mine?
I don't remember it. We didn't use that method there. It was all timbering. It was all... what I would say, clay. It's sort of a grey kind of a clay. And I think it could ease your luck with a trenchant tool, as we called it. We called it an entrenchant tool. And it was all filled by shovels into sacks, sandbags, you know. And then it was dragged along till I got to the shaft bottom where the... there was a big hook and a rope came down.
You said that last time. Now,
yeah.
Another point I want to make is I rather pushed you into making a guess at how far you went today, but I now understand that you're not sure and you don't think
But there was one time, it was, but that was later on in the Hoos Chateau. There was a lot of competition. There was other mining teams as well as us.
We'll come to that then. Did you have any ventilation arrangements in that Hoos Chateau?
Yes, we had a blacksmith's bellows and a pipe laid from the blacksmith. It was on the surface and a pipe laid down the hose pipe and it got you plenty of air. But that was... it had to come into operation to get air not a great long time after we hit the shaft bottom, you know. You see, when we got away, well, we were getting away from the natural air. But a blacksmith bellows put that right. It was sufficient air for you to carry on. And you know, the candles goes wonky. That's a sort of an indication that the air's getting slack. You notice that first, before you notice it in yourself, that the air was becoming slack. You could tell by the candle, the way the candle was burning, that the air was getting slack.
How could you tell? How would it burn? What, you mean it would flicker or what?
Well, it seemed to burn. Yes, I would describe it partly as a flicker, but it was given a sort of a dim kind of a light. It didn't burn as a candle should, do you, though? There's plenty of air, and it's like some glow, but it was like just half a normal light that you should have by a candle. There wasn't, you may say, the oxygen in the air that was what was, along with the candle, was supplying the burning power, you know. That.
What would you do when the candle was flickering? When you saw this, what would you do?
Well, we usually reported it. And the officer came through and to use his discretion what had to be done about it. And he maybe recall you till you got some better methods of ventilation, which could be produced by the bellows at the surface. And the hose pipe being laid right up to where the face men were walking, do you see? Then you got the air all right. That did it, but it supplied all our needs was the blacksmith bellows on the ground. And it was on the surface, but the tube away from it laid in, you know, and the open-ended pipe near where you were walking, that kept you supplied with air.
Was it stuffy even with that? Was the atmosphere oppressive anyway, even with that, or was it all right?
Well, as you were going ahead of it, the time came when the same problem was there again. You wanted an extension of your pipe, and you noticed at first that the air was getting slack the way your candles were burning.
Was there any other sort of gas you were worried about down there? Methane gas or anything like that? Or was it too shallow?
Well, it was when the Germans herd were walking. The gas was used underground.
But not on the Hoos Chateau one?
Oh, no, not on the Hoos Chateau. This came later on.
As the tunnel went in, would it get smaller, the shaft, you know, as you were going towards the... Would it shrink or would it stay the same size as you were?
Well, I think it was all about 4x4. The galleries, if I remember rightly, and close timbered right up to where we laid the charge, you know. We carried ammonol in it for an explosion. That's a high explosive powder. And then it was the stem.
You told me about that last time, yeah.
Yes.
You'd had to have the tunnel pumped out, you mentioned, by the Gurkhas. You know, you had a pump. Was there any real risk of the tunnel flooding, or was it fairly safe?
Well, I don't remember that water even ever being a trouble at all to that extent that there was flooding. No, we certainly had water, but we could always beat it by a hand pump. A hand pump and a hose pipe that you could send it back to the away up the shaft, you know, and the hose pipe, and then it was delivered away from there.
Now, when you were telling me about the start of the site, you said it was in a trench. Would it by any chance have come from a cellar? Because I read somewhere that the Hoos Chateau wallet had come from a cellar.
Oh, yes. The office, I think it was a headquarters of German officers.
The British shaft was sunk from a cellar in the stables. Would that be possible, or is that not what you were working on?
No, we didn't. We started from a shaft. We didn't start from
a
cellar.
And the shaft just came from outside, a normal place outside. It wasn't from a cellar of a building or anything like that.
It was like the cellars that the Germans were using, that the Germans of the huge chateau. That was that's the way. We never really knew what we were under, actually, but we could surmise, you know. We could hear the patter of their feet and the voices in German. And we had to have our feet muffled, and under no account had we to speak, or no account had we to smoke. They weren't allowed to smoke. But, well, we started to load up there in that spot.
You told me about that last time. Yeah. Now, how did the British troops react to you miners at this time in June, July 1915?
Well, some of the infantry officers wasn't in favour of mining. And some wanted mining. And then again, there was parties of miners here and parties of miners further on, another group, and then another group further on. And the time came when they wanted tunneling done quickly. And to get that done...
I'll come to that later. Sorry to keep cutting you off. What would you wear when you were tunneling?
What clothes did we wear?
Yes.
Well, just a service uniform. Well, it weren't very particular whether your buttons were polished or not, you know. That way, but we just used the khaki uniform. And usually we took our tunic off. You could swing use your spade better or use your intention tool. Easy, you know, you're more free of movement. Even workmen here, you find when they're a lot of hacking to do, they take a coat and waistcoat off and do that in the short sleeves.
Would your uniform get a bit tatty with the underground working?
Getting a bit what?
Tatty, you know, worn at the knees and elbows.
Oh, yes, we used to wear our trousers out, yes, we did. But we could always get another supply. In fact, really, when we went out the trenches, they used to give us usually a new rig out altogether. That was both your linens and trousers and body shirts and shirt clean away from the quartermaster stores, because those was many of them torn and dirtied up, you know, that walking among clay, got all mucked up with it many a time. Oh, yes, when we went back to the billet, the quartermaster stores, well, you could get a new uniform when you went apart. Well, your boots weird, but your coat and trousers, and often your shirts as well, because I'm sorry to tell you, but it's quite a fact that if you've been in the trenches a while and sleeping and walking with the same clothes, you got lousy. And there was very few troops out there that wasn't lousy if they'd been out a while. And when we got back, well, they were just sent to the incinerator, your clothes was, and you got a new uniform. Expense was no object.
And that would clear the lights, would it?
Oh, that was the best thing to do with them. And
what?
Everybody got lousy out there. I don't know. I never knew a man that after we'd been out there, especially in trench warfare, where he was sleeping and using all that clothing through the day and night, you know, day and night, that's how it come. And my God, it's not very nice when you get lousy either.
How did it affect you?
Eh?
How did it affect you?
How did it affect me? Well, they usually start here under the oxters, and then they'll get down in the seams of your trousers. You notice when you take, there's some white, just like... just like little seeds, white little seeds. But eventually they become alive. And everybody had them, more or less, if he'd put a few weeks in the trenches, he became lousy.
Did you try and get, besides being given a new uniform as tunnellers, did you have any way of trying to get rid of them before that happened, you know, keeping them down?
Oh, yes, you used to have an inspection and kill them like that.
Between your thumbnails?
Just like that. Or you'd say the seeds, you know, that eventually becomes lice, squeeze them like that, they say. Not the way you have to do that. My God, once you get lousy, you know about it. My God, you did. But you had to have a daily inspection of your trousers, and especially your undershirts, It was where it was next to the skin, you see. Under the oxalis. And, it's especially where there were seams, you know, and in your clothing, you'll see little white dots there.
And they itched a lot, did they?
Oh, yes, if you want to get fairly hold of them, by God, I had no sleep with it. You're in misery.
Was it worse when you'd worked up a sweat underground? Or did that not affect things?
Well, I would say you felt it most when you laid down to sleep. You knew then whether you were lousy or not, but through the day it didn't seem to make much matter. And officers were the same way. You had to have an inspection of the clothes you were wearing. Well, you had to have an see where the little lice was alive and it killed them, you know. And that was the way. And officers were all the same. They had the lice as well. And I don't know where it came from. We used to call it the lousy country. But anyhow, with people, well, you know. Now, I remember one chap, he almost cried one way when he saw he had them things on him. And he'd been no time in the trenches before he was lousy. But
now, this first time,
he seemed to think it was your fault.
This first time, you were in the trenches for a month, I think.
Yes, yes, yes.
When you were in the trenches, now, your depot was at Vlamertinge. When you were in the front line, where were your billets? Were they right? Did you go back to Vlamertinge every night, yeah, or would you have billets further forward in the trenches?
Oh, no, when you went in the trenches, you stopped in the trenches. Dugouts that was in the trenches.
And where
but,
were
but when you came back to your billet, we were billeted about, I would say, about 10 mile behind the front line.
So while you were digging the Hooge tunnel, where were your dugouts? Were they in Sanctuary Wood?
Yes, the dugouts were in Sanctuary Wood.
What were they like, those dugouts? Can you remember anything about
well,
them? How deep, how...
They were usually... they were in the front line of trench, you know, and you would dig in. And, some of the trenches were 6 feet deep. And not all that way, but the majority of them, some of them were more than 6 feet deep. And you dug in, say that was the height. Well, so that was the height of the trench. Well, you just dug in there, and then you started to... You made a dugout in there. And if there wasn't sufficient height, you made more height by filling bags of sand, and then we had a lot of corrugated iron sheets. That's what we used to put on the top, a corrugated iron sheet. But amazingly, it was a very poor protection from a shell fire, because if a shell fire landed on top of that well, I knew a dugout, and I was jolly lucky that I wasn't in it. There was, there'll be maybe about 14 or 20 of us in this dugout, and it was right the front line trench, but it was being extended a good way, and you know, it was just covered with corrugated iron. That's, a shell landed on the top of it, but fortunately I was out that day. And I think I had to go to seek some rations. The rations hadn't arrived. They come at nights, you know, the limber wagons, that's mules. It used to be a wagon filled with their rations.
We'll come back to that, but what happened to the dugout when it was hit?
Well, it just simply was blown away, and all that was in it was killed. I know an officer of mine, I had to go out. I would have been in that lot as well, but my rations hadn't arrived. You see, the rations, you maybe stay in the trench maybe for a month, but every night from your depot there was a wagon load of rations, the tools you required, the food you required, and also ammunition, if you required that was
before
sent.
We go right, I'll go on to that next. But did you make these dugouts for yourself?
For ourselves? Oh, yes, sometimes. Sometimes somebody had vacated them. Maybe there'd been
the ones in Sanctuary Wood, though. Did you make those?
In Sanctuary Wood? Yes, we made our own dugouts there. That's the first place in the lane I was in Sanctuary Wood.
And how much space would you have in a dugout for your living?
Well, there's difference of sizes. Some of them, I've seen fellas just sleeping in their cells, made a narrow recess in the trench and just slept in there. And but they had a, usually, sometimes if the trench was high enough, you could leave just what trench there was there, do you say, and build up the sites. And sometimes there was a fairly big dugout. It would maybe be, maybe about 10 yards square.
When you were in the dugout, you wouldn't have any place to lie down, I presume, bar on the floor.
We lay on the floor. Yes, we just laid on the floor. There wasn't any beds for you. No, you had to get every soldier carried a ground sheet and a blanket. And, many times you had plenty of blankets because maybe being a good few didn't require the blankets anymore. They just to be buried in. But there was, you could always find a blanket or something in France, yes.
So that's where you'd go to sleep when you weren't on shift, when it wasn't
that's
your shift.
That's where you got your, you had to get your entertainment in there. Well, you wrote your letters in there and you shaved yourself in the dugout. And
how was it lit? By candle?
Yes, there was no other way, just candles. And there was a, sometimes you had more candles and you knew what to deal with, and there's been times when there were shortages of candles as well, you know, the same as there was with your food. Sometimes you have plenty to eat, and another time it never arrived, because you used to get a supply of rations sent into the trenches every night, you know. What you required for your walking and all the supplies that you required, it was all sent up at night.
So what was this food then? We'll go on to the food. What food did you get?
Well, there was potatoes, and there was bacon, and cheese. You got a lot of cheese. You know, it was always called bungie. That was a slang name we had for the cheese.
Why was that?
Well, I suppose it doesn't affect upon when you're making your bowel motions. Some say it sets it hard, you know. That, I suppose that's how the... Oh, the name Bungie could come. That was always called Bungie, yes. Yes, well, we got...
What other food would you get?
We got... that's the first place I saw tin beans. These tin beans. It was called pork and beans then, though. It wasn't tin beans, it was pork and beans. And that's the first time I saw that. And then we got tin jam. And there was tin milk. That went out there as well. There was tea. It came up in a sandbag, being filled out of a big container at the depot, you know, and that was filled up. That was your ration of tea. And every night your rations came in. If they were fortunate to get through the shell fire, you know, because the Germans had a good idea where the trucks was that we used at night time, but everything had to be done at night in the darkness, because you couldn't, it would be foolishness to expose yourself in daylight where you would maybe in full view of the Germans, you know.
So you get the rations for the next day?
Every night the rations. Yes, then they had what we called the dumping ground. And you had to go out and seek them rations. But no doubt to carry any on your shoulders. There was the mail bag and also the bread bag. And there were tins of jam and tins of beans. And
Did you get bully beef?
Bully beef, oh yes. In fact, There was not much bully beef, I can tell you. There was roads. The foundation was boxes of bully beef. There was about 144, I think it was 144 tins in the box. These be about a pound tins. And they made a good foundation to work on, you know. They were square, these boxes, and where they were put into where there was a lot of mud that was, you know, maybe ankle deep with mud, which it was some places in the Ypres salient.
Well, come to that, because I know you were on road building later on. What about McConachy's? Did you get that?
Get what?
McConachy's. Tins of McConachy.
Mythology?
McConachy.
Oh, McConachy's. Oh, yes, yes, you were jolly fortunate if you got one. That was a dinner. And McConachy, it was a tin dinner. There was beef and, pork and beans and vegetables. And, but mind you, you were... It was only once in a while that a McConachy got to my unit, I'll tell you that.
Would you ever get any hot rations at all brought up? You wouldn't, would you?
Oh, no, hot rations, no.
Did you try and heat your own food in the trench?
Oh, yes. There was a cook in the trench. Sometimes two or three cooks, if there was a unit to serve with food, you just went along to they called that the cookhouse. It was a cookhouse, yes, and you...
But not in the line?
Yes, in the line. Yes. But it was all... When you wanted a fire in the line, it had to be made of wood, and the wood that you used had to be about the thickness of a matchstick. And if you had a fire with wood made with... just thin slices of wood, you find you didn't get the smoke. You see, if your wood's thick, it gives off a smoke. But when it's cut down to just like shavings, there's no smoke. And that's the way we had to cook. Oh, yes, there was... You got your tea boiled and these Dixie can, you know, and there was cooks. That was their job, to serve that unit. And all units had the cooks right in the front line of trenches. And he usually got bully beef. Stew was a very favourite thing. If there wasn't beef, they would boil bully beef. And mind, I'll tell you, there was once I lived for a fortnight on bully beef. And believe me, it's terrible. Your mouth becomes dry like salt. You know, my God. But that's the only thing you could get. But it kept you alive. I will say that these people lived a long time on bully beef. Nothing but bully beef. There was nothing else. Maybe all the bread being smashed up with shell fire and coming and never was never distributed in the front line because it never got there. But as I say, once you've got the bully beef day after day, bully beef and biscuits, these big iron biscuits, you know, we used to call them dog biscuits, but they're like what they call a ship's biscuit. Use them on the ships. And, they were best if you boiled them, because if you could get your Dixie can, we used to have a Dixie can, you know, and one of these ship's biscuits would go in there, and get it on a fire, on a bit of a wood fire or a candle fire, and it would swell that biscuit right out, and you could eat it better. But the iron rations, as they call them, well, you know, a biscuit lost your nose before you could get it one masticated. They were that hard, and not to be in your mouth that long, you know. But they kept you alive. I remember once we went a fortnight on iron rations. That was bully beef, as we called it, and the biscuits, big square, though, like a dog biscuit.
Did you get enough water?
Did what?
Get enough water, your water ration?
It was carried in as well, but sometimes there was bits of streams, you know, where you could go for your water in the trenches, or maybe find there was water on the trench bottom that had accumulated maybe with rainfalls or maybe with a bits of streams, you know. And there was a stream at Hill 60, I know it run, and we used to go there for water. But I may tell you, I've seen dead bodies in there too. That's true.
Did you boil it?
Yes, we usually boil it. We got a wood fire, if possible. Oh, yes, we made tea. Oh, there was the cook-house. Those men, they were termed, their work was cooks. They were termed the cooks. And we went there for, we got 3 meals a day, I think, there.